All right, welcome everybody to another interview in the series at thetruthisyou.com about people, interview with people of who have woken up to what their true identity is. And today I'm super excited to be speaking with Paul Hederman, who runs. Paul, you've been sharing this message for like 18 years now, right?
Well, variations of it, but I've been sharing from the message, yes. 20 years,
that's amazing. And amongst other things, Paul does local talks and a bunch of podcasts, which I'm sure we'll get into in the interview, but that's been my exposure to him, to be at a few of his talks. And his message is real clear and comes, I think, from a different angle than a lot of traditional or like classic spiritual teachers or whatever might come from. But anyway, Paul, why don't you let everybody know sort of who you are and how you got started on all this?
Well, you know, that's just a story. I don't know what's going on really, but I got one of the forms my mind tried to escape or to make things unreal was spirituality at one time. So I was introduced to a teacher, a guru, when I was about 18 or 19. And I was with him or around him and his situation for about 5 years. And at that time, before that, I had been using a lot of drugs and alcohol. And I was an addict and an alcoholic. And wanting to know God seemed to be sufficient to keep me from drinking and using for about 5 years. I had a couple of Heinekens maybe in about 5 years. So that was pretty amazing in and of itself. But the dilemma I had was it didn't work for me, the guru, student relationship, because he was presented to me as the Lord of the universe, yes? And so, and then there I was. And so there's the Lord of the universe, and there I am, and I don't like the Lord of the universe. And that was a very difficult thing in my head, because what did that make me to be someone who doesn't like the Lord of the universe? Well, my mind riffed on that for about 5 years, and it was excruciating, really. So, and it was funny because I had no idea about anything called spirituality. I was brought up a Catholic in New York, and I had forgotten about that, basically. But I had thousands of ideas as soon as I got into that realm of spirituality. Thousands of concepts and ideas came up. How they should be, meaning the teacher and his followers, how I should be. Unbelievable. So it gave me a great example of the content of conditional mind that is ready to arise or to express as soon as you come in contact with something, yes? Some idea, some situation, and it just downloads thousands and thousands and thousands of thoughts and opinions and feelings concerning that. So what happened was I got disappointed with that, and I went out, started to use and drink again, and I quickly got run over by a car like twice in one night. Whoa. Which is a difficult thing to do. I got hit by the car. He didn't know what he hit, so he backed up over me. So and that really had a strong effect on my physicality, definitely, for the rest of my life, actually. But it didn't bring about a surrender. And as soon as I got, quote unquote, better, I started to use and do drugs again. And I went on like that for a while to about 1988, and then I got into recovery. And I've been clean and sober ever since. So that's actually how it started for me. I was doing workshops in recovery about some of the steps of the 12-step program. And when I heard this message outside of recovery, my mind entertained it. And then I had a lot of downloads about what I was engaged with, which was this big book of recovery. And I saw it in a whole different light. And that light I saw it in sort of became the last answer that I've received. And the light I saw it in is in recovery, they present the root of the problem as obsession with self. And I'm talking about the feeling of being a long-lasting, independent, separate entity. If some people would use the small s. So after practicing from that point of view for about 9 years, I heard this message from outside, not a satsang, and I started to entertain it. And then the downloads really started to come, and I came to the conclusion from the inside out, actually, that the root of the problem was identification as self, which is a different situation. And that's why I call it selfing, because you can actually not become a self, but the mind is desiring to become a self constantly, yes? But it can never actually fulfill that desire. And that inability to fulfill that desire, because it is already no thingness, so it can't become a self. What happens when that is unfulfilled? There's a level of irritability, restlessness, and discontent that fuels seeking. It can go in a lot of directions, spiritually or drug use or alcoholism or sex, whatever, but there's a drive to get fulfillment based on the original, or let's say the prior or the primary addiction, which I believe is mind addicted to the idea of being a self. So that's what happened. I started doing workshops. The mind shifted to a point where the emphasis got stabilized. And then I started to share at those workshops this feeling of the message, which it took a few years for people to realize they weren't getting what they came there for. But by then it was too late. So, and then it's just morphed into what's happening now. Yeah. So that's the story.
That's it's really interesting on two levels, because one of the ways that I connected with you originally is because I have my own experiences in 12-step programs through a different addiction to food. And but part of my story of being a seeker started when I was 5 years old, and I heard somebody at a party say, "I'm just trying to find myself," and it just profoundly confused me, and I went on trying to find this self thing, and in retrospect couldn't find it, but that looking for something that wasn't there locked me down to such a point that I was in a lot of pain and anguish and social awkwardness and whatever, and I buried that under, you know, excessive eating. So that's really interesting.
I would say all the addictions come from that primary one of the mind addicted to the idea of being a self. Yeah.
And so what would be your definition of, if you have one, of awakening, or somebody who wakes up or dissolves that misconception of having a separate self?
Well, the thing, I don't believe there's anyone that wakes up, obviously. I just think the mind becomes aware of what's already so, yeah? Hmm. And my way of looking at it, it's more the seeing of what you're not than the finding of what you are, because when there's the seeing of what you're not, that's what you are, is the seeing of that, yeah? There is no finding of what you are. It's already an activity right now. It's just not being noticed. Because we're taking ourselves to be a figment of the conditional mind. You know, the mental process is producing a sense of being a self through the selfing. Yeah? So that as soon as that's set up, as soon as this object takes itself to be the subject, then it's cast in a dualistic manner. Yeah. So now I'm the subject to everything else, and everything else becomes an object to me, which is, now awakening becomes an object to me. I'm going to get awakened, or I'm going to wake up. That would presume that there's a you there to do that. I don't believe there's a you there to do it. Yeah. Yeah. I don't believe there is a you to wake up. Therefore, there isn't a you not to be awake. Yeah. There's just awakeness or awareness. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. I've heard you talk a lot about, there's just seeing, and you put it in one talk that I happened to be at about how we are just seeing is just what's happening, and then somehow with the mind we then take sort of a step forward into our faces so that it's our eyes and ears that are seeing and hearing, when in fact that's what seeing and hearing is happening through,
yeah.
I think was how
yeah.
you put it.
Yeah, yeah. Like Lord Buddha said, when you see, when you hear, when you taste, when you touch, when you feel. But see, when the mental process claims that conscious contact, it's when you see, you're the seer. When you hear, you're the hearer. When you are aware of feeling, you're the feeler. Yes? This is a giant leap.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I would say conscious contact has been hijacked by the mental process and now it it claims to be the one who is conscious, yeah. The one who is feeling, seeing. But that, I don't see that as so.
Yeah, and when some one of the distinctions that I got real clear with listening to some of your podcasts was this thing that you talk about, the claiming or the appending of the word my before a thing, and then suddenly it gains so much more importance. And the thing that when I felt into that sort of came up for me was that that at some level this idea of a separate self is sort of a boundary between that's erected between what we believe and are okay with believing we are, and then what we're not okay with believing that we are. And then when a thought happens within that boundary, that automatically, because we use the word, you know, I am a man, or I am this tall, or whatever, or, you know, automatically we imply all the things that we're not, and we sort of keep up that dualistic reinforcement of the boundary.
Well, yeah, it's the same way, like, you can see the dualism in everywhere, but let's just say the idea of getting into the moment is there's a lot of books written about how to get into the moment, or how to get really into the moment, or how to really, really get into the moment. But the idea really is, how could you possibly be out of the moment? Yeah, you are that moment.
Right.
Yeah, you would have to be a separate entity to be in and out of it. I don't see that to be the case. And the same thing, so people are trying to get into what they can't be out of. And then on the other side, they're trying to get out of what they can't be in. So they're trying to get out of self, but they can't be in a self.
Right.
So that's the sort of dilemma. The dualism, when you're thinking you're moving towards something, you're actually a lot of times moving away from it. Yes? So
right.
It's we have it, our maps, the conditional mind's maps of the movement of things here and no thing here is way off. It's actually it's almost like bizarro world, yeah? It's the exact
right.
opposite of what we assume to be. So I mean, a lot of people have a huge story about how they weren't in the moment.
Right.
So, I mean, the emphasis is on you that could be in or out of the moment, not the moment. In awareness or whatever, the emphasis is on the moment, let's say. Yeah, it's not on an imaginary you.
And I think you kind of touched upon this a little bit, but maybe if you could talk a little bit about, if there were any, but what were your... I don't get the sense that when you got this message that there was a sudden, shift in you that, like, oh, I've got to get that. Right.
No.
I mean, yeah. So I don't know if you could articulate maybe some, like, were there any challenges or barriers to sort of this new, when the message sank in for you, that were there any problems with sort of addressing that in your day to day life or?
Well, yeah. When I had those quote unquote big events, but they basically sooner or later became claimed by the selfing, which, see, the self is very able and willing to claim its own absence. Yeah, that's what it's doing all day. Mm-hmm. So let's say if you have an epiphany or whatever, an epiphany occurs where it's sort of like the linear story gets intervened on, and there's a sense of that pause or that sense of moment without subject or object in it. And but usually it ends, and you never make a reservation for an epiphany, do you? No. You don't know what's coming. You can call ahead and get some Kenny G music pumped in. It sort of just comes out of the blue in a way.
It would be nicer if we could.
Yeah, it would be. You could reserve a nice space, on a seashore or something. But what happens is the mind rises and says, I just had this incredible experience, this incredible epiphany. So that is the selfing claiming its own absence, yes? Hmm. That's what it does. So the thing with me is, I don't know what happened. I was just entertaining. I heard the messages in a couple of different people. I read a few books. I went to India. I listened to people share. And I like to use the term entertained because that's how it feels like to me. My mind came out of that mental yogic posture, the asana of self, And it's the only, it's one of the only yoga systems has only one posture, you know, which is I mean, but it came out and to answer this message. Yeah. And in the answering, that was the answer of the message. It was like an unspoken yes. And then it was a shift in emphasis, like the mind got recalibrated, where instead of being in that form of self-centeredness, that form of looking, it started to see, which it didn't. In other words, the seeing didn't begin, but the mind started to see. Yeah, the seeing was always available, but it started to see, and it and when it started to shake, it started to happen. I went, yeah, the physicality, the apparatus, the mind, the conditional mind went through a lot of changes, almost like a 9-month period, almost like a pregnancy in a way. Mm. Yeah, it was it was like a certain edge of onness that was uncomfortable for a mind that liked to fall asleep, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But and if you die and you don't really act out, everything gets good.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, if for people who are in sort of the stage of hearing this kind of message and then really it hooks them somehow and they're really wanting to sort of dig in and make sense of it or something, what would you have any advice for somebody who is going through that, sort of the early stages?
Yeah, please don't right. And try to make sense of it. Just saying it, yeah. Follow your gut and see, the way I look at it is more like non-duality. They talk about a lot of non-duality, but non-duality is a negation. Yeah, it says not two. It doesn't say there's one. It just says not two. Yeah. So for me, I always like that movement of seeing what you're not. Yeah, is as far as you can go. So you can tell the truth about what you're not. You can teach about what you're not. You can't teach about what you are because you are it. But you can teach about what you're not. So all that information about what you're not distills into one simple statement, and it's more than a statement, which is, I am not that. In that seeing of what you're not, that's what I am. Yeah, I am that seeing of what I'm not. It doesn't mean there's a seer. That would be subject-object again. It's seeing. It's seeing, yeah? So, but if you have an inclination, it's like Ramana Maharshi said, you know, your head is already in the tiger's mouth. It's a done deal. So, you know, just follow and see what resonates with you. But repetition can be helpful here. Just like it's a poison in a sense here, it can be an antidote. So I like, that's why I do 3 talks a week when I'm here, and I go around and wherever I'm invited, if I can pull it off, I go there and just share it, because the repetition I find to be helpful. Right. Yeah, and it's just a message. It's not like a dissertation. Yeah, it's sort of like I've never had a message that was 50 pages long, you know, or an invitation that went on and on and on. It's like, Paul, 8 o'clock, be there. All right. Yeah, it's like, to me, it's like the engine of the car. The car is stalled, the engine is stalled, and it's like taking off the air filter, and you put it, and then someone's there, and it has the key in the ignition, and then you just put a couple of drops of gas in, and then you push on the accelerator, and it catches, and the car is running again, right? You don't stand there and put more gas in. That would flood it. So this is sort of, to me, the message is like a catalyst. It's just there to excite the mind, because when the mind sees it's not what it's taken itself to be, the immediate thing it can entertain is, I can be free of that. Yeah. As soon as you see what you're not, the next possibility is, I can be free of that. Most people are trying to become free as that. Yeah, which is impossible. You can't become free as a self. Self is never going to get out of self. There's not going to be a point where you're going to run to the parameter of the fence of self, because you're the fence post. Wherever you are is the parameter of self, yeah? When you're identified as a long-lasting, independent, separate entity. You can't get out of it as what it is, yeah? So this is seeing more, I'm not that. And then you realize you don't need to get out of it because you were never in it. And that's truly being out of it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The version of the, when the message finally clicked to me, for me, one of the persistent reminders that I got is that, in spirituality or spiritual paths, which this sort of message gets often gets subsumed into, there's a certain sense of chasing after big experiences, like big oceanic awareness or, you know, Christ consciousness or all that stuff, or meditative states. The person I worked primarily with at the beginning is John Sherman, and he would say, you know, you'll look at what you are, you look away from what you're not, look to what you are, and then you'll have an experience, because it's the nature of looking for something that some experience will be created. But if you then the next time around go after that experience, you're no longer actually attending to the matter of entertaining what you might be. You know?
Well, I would just to make it quicker in a way, just see what you're not. That's
right.
That. Because you can't look towards what you are, because you are it. The eye can't see itself. Yeah. What's seeing can never be seen. What's hearing can never be heard. What's feeling can never be felt. It's an impossibility. It would have to be an object to us, and it isn't. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's in my own personal sort of, you know, rebirthing, or like you talked about the 9-month kind of process about all this, is that there was a point where I was trying to do that. I was trying to look at me. And I just realized, well, nothing's happening. And then I thought, well, then that's it. Nothing's happening.
Nothing.
That's right.
Yes. This is about getting nothing.
Right.
It's all this. And then the mind wants to make it something, but
yeah,
all it is getting nothing. Yeah.
Yeah, which is kind of a ripoff.
But the thing is, these people have been getting a whole lot of something, and what does it usually total up to? Nothing. So this is about starting with nothing. See what happens.
Right.
You may get a whole lot of something. It's the gift that keeps on giving. Nothing. It is.
Awesome. So just to sort of round things out, how can people learn more about you and hear about more of your sharing?
Well, it's not about me, but they can hear the message, yes. They don't want to learn about me. I'd rather not waste time there.
Right.
I have a website, the zenbitchslap.com. Yes, you know, zenbitchslap. And then there's podcasts there, and I speak 3 times in San Francisco, and we have events. I just got back from Toronto, and then I was on the East Coast for a while. So, they're all free to download and see if something registers. For me, it's like I say, the repetition can be valuable, because the mind, it's almost like a lazy Susan in a way. You're trying to, you know, but it's like a carousel of a lazy Susan. It's moving on its own, selfing. So you're putting putting an envelope with a conceptualized message on the front, right? But actually, if it gets through and gets past the selfing, because the selfing will see the message and can't make much of it, and then when your mind opens it up, what's in it is nothing. But the mind recognizes nothing. Yes. The conditional mind does not recognize nothing. If it runs into nothing, it has to make it something. But mind recognizes nothing. It does. And that's all is needed. Once mind wakes up to that possibility, there's no stopping it. Yeah? It has the ability to entertain, and it will entertain this. Yeah?
Awesome. Yeah, I just want to mention that you also have a calendar of your events and like where you're going to talk on the website. But I highly encourage anybody to go there and check out, because the number, just the sheer volume of talk about repetition. You've got a lot of podcasts on that site. And that's been my experience in getting, free samples from the message that you share. You know, that repetition has been really, really advantageous to me. And, just listening to you on long drives has just been a delight. So, Thank you very much for all that work.
Thanks. Yeah, and it's always, we're always putting new content up there. That's the beauty of it. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, this has been truly wonderful, and I'm sure that all my the people who come to my website are going to get a great deal out of this. And when I put it up, of course, I'll send you the link and all that. But was there anything you wanted to say before we sort of wrap up?
No, thanks. Thanks for asking me. I appreciate it.
Awesome. All right, Paul. Thanks a lot, and I'll speak with you soon.
All right, Travis.